Turundusraadio .
Hello and dear listeners, welcome to our Marketing Radio talk show number 152. My name is Anu Malnarits, I'm from Marketing Institute in Estonia and I'm your host today. And my guest via Skype is Miikael Lauharanda, who is COO from the Smart company from UK. Hello, Miikael.
Hey, how are you doing?
Turunduse tulejoonel.
And today we are focusing on the topic we haven't touched much here yet. It's about employee advocacy in social selling. Mm-hmm. And to introduce the topic, I would like to say that employee advocacy programs have been always kind of part of social selling. But we really have to admit that often it's easier to have ideas about what we should do than to really execute the programs and get results. Yeah. So you have the programs, you have the results, and you have good examples. And I start from the very beginning. What is employee advocacy and how is it connecting to social selling? So can you briefly explain?
Yes, of course. So it's a really simple concept after all. It's all about encouraging your employees to participate in the digital and online communications of the company. So just providing them with interesting, valuable content to share for their social media networks. And obviously by definition, social selling, at least for me, is kind of like involving and engaging your existing networks, whether they're online or offline. Engaging them during the sales process, so kind of like even by definition, they go very well hand in hand. So if you're in sales, then you're going to be interested in kind of sharing interesting, thoughtful content to your networks and your followers, whether it helps you to just keep and stay in touch with your network, or if it helps you grow your network, or if it then actually helps you to get more leads to close more business. So I think that is why they're really tightly connected.
How easy is it to get the employees to share the content of the company? Especially yeah. when we look at the, let's say, Facebook area, where mostly likes you get, either you show a puppy or you show a small kid or maybe a nice yeah. food and travel pictures. So everything that is more corporate-like doesn't get so much noticing.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And all of the networks are different. And I think it all starts with employees being volunteers and voluntarily sharing content. So obviously, Facebook is more personal, more private. So you don't want to share everything to Facebook that you might be sharing to LinkedIn and Twitter. So as long as the content is valuable, I like to think that the content needs to be valuable for three different kind of stakeholders. So valuable content for yourself, valuable for your networks, and at the end of the day, if it's valuable for the company as well, then it works. But definitely LinkedIn is the most professional, probably out of the social media networks involved in social selling. Twitter also is a little bit more professional than maybe Facebook. And then in Facebook, it's more going to be about the kind of like employer brand and the kind of culture you have in the company and the fun and cool things that you're doing. So definitely always different types of content works for different channels.
Are there any type of companies that benefit most from the social selling?
Yeah, so we have we're a platform provider in this space, and we have all sorts of different clients. So our smallest clients are startups of maybe 10 or 20 employees, and then they go all the way up to listed clients and Fortune 500 companies like EMC and Ernst & Young. But I think the benefits of employee advocacy also scale when the companies become bigger. So you might have different sort of challenges in the internal communication, for example, or if you've grown through doing acquisitions, then some of your employees might not know what the newly acquired company or a different department or an arm is actually doing. So it actually helps you to also communicate internally more efficiently. And then then also achieve that kind of benefit externally when the employees understand it and share it forward. But something I always like to say is, as long as you have employees and something to say, you can benefit from employee advocacy and social selling. So it's not so much tied into a certain size of a company or a certain industry.
But of course, it's easier to influence the employees when the team is small, up to 10, 20 persons. You can personally talk to everyone to discuss what to publish, when to publish, where to publish, and it's kind of easier. On the other side, we see that maybe as the possible amount of followers is very low, maybe the influence isn't too big. Then on the other side, when we take a bigger company, it's vice versa. You can have big influence, but it's much more difficult probably to talk to everyone and explain the concept.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. So kind of like the benefits are a little bit different for different size companies. So obviously when you're a startup or a fledgling company, your social media following probably isn't that large yet. People don't know about you. So then in that case, it is important that you involve your employees in actually communicating about what you can help them with and what are your values and the big wins that you get so that you can reach more people through your networks. But then if you look at a really big company, then it is all about kind of like making the managing of employee advocacy and social selling easier. So actually just having the peace of mind knowing that all your employees know what is actually meant for external sharing and what is internal content, and also being able to measure the results of the campaign. And a lot of the bigger clients that we're talking to are already, for example, sending emails to their employees that, hey, we have these open positions or these sort of things are happening, and please share this to your social media networks if you want to. But then there's no way of kind of measuring this activity and the results. So then having a platform or a software for this makes it a lot easier to manage.
But what about different industries? Would it be, of course, I understand that in consultants' business, it's a kind of lot of valuable content you can share. But let's bring another example from really an old traditional bricks and mortar business, like, I don't know, a bakery.
Yeah.
How could a bakery use employee advocacy in social selling? Should they try or should they just skip?
Yeah, definitely. There's benefits for them as well. So whether it's kind of like recruiting and in the end, recruiting is sort of selling as well. You're trying to sell your company and the values that you have and yourself as a working place. So it could be used for recruiting and just reaching more people and more relevant people if you're a bakery. Or it could be just kind of like making the employees that you already have feel more engaged about the company that they work in, actually seeing that the things that they're doing together. And so regardless of kind of like the industry, sometimes employee advocacy could be used for kind of like engaging the employees more. So if there's low morale or low employee engagement, then this can actually help tackle it, because you show that your employees that you want them to be more involved in the day-to-day, you want them to be involved in the sharing of the communication, and then through that they can actually find the kind of like love for that company again. So it helps in that regard as well.
Wow. But how much from the traditional, let's say, communication budget should a bakery put on social selling and employee advocacy? 5%, 10%, 100%?
It's hard to say an exact number that works for all industries or all examples, but I think the key here is that taking a look, what have they done so far? Like if they have never bought, for example, online advertising, then it's going to be harder to find the right figure. But definitely we have clients both that have not used online advertising so much before, and then they see what sort of results, what sort of a kind of cost per click they achieve through employee advocacy. But also then in the case that you've already been more active, you know the kind of like figures that you're aiming for and you can afford to have, then you can start using this and then see if it actually can help lower your cost per click or increase your return on investment on your existing content. One interesting finding that we made is that you might spend $1 million to a video on YouTube, but then you're happy if you get 1,000 views. So companies that have more of a budget already in marketing are not obsessing and not thinking about how can they create more visibility and attract more eyeballs to the content that they've already paid for. So in that sense, it can also help you kind of like get more bang for the content that you've already created.
Absolutely. Can you tell me, or can you bring me an example about employee advocacy campaign that helped really significantly to decrease the click per, cost per click?
Yeah. So one of our clients that we have reference rights to is Ernst & Young. So we have a nice quote from their program manager, and they started in the Nordic countries, and actually when they started using employee advocacy, they achieved a lower cost per click than they've ever received through online advertising, whether it's social media or Google AdWords based. So that's one example that we can give of a client actually achieving a lower cost per click. But day after day and with almost every client, we can notice that the investment that you do to an employee advocacy software is usually significantly lower than comparing to the cost of buying advertising, so to say, on social media. So in LinkedIn, for example, if you want to have your content from your company appear in the newsfeed where everybody's paying attention to, then the price is probably around 3 to 4 euros per click. So it's a significant investment usually.
But can you tell a bit more about the Ernst & Young example? What did they do in order to achieve this type of results?
Yeah, so for their campaign, they had a lot of different kind of like goals for the campaign, and some of them were internal and some of them were external. But the kind of like overall goals for them was to raise just visibility overall of EY and their people and their services, and also to kind of build the brand through the employees instead of relying on just their company profiles. But at the same time, they also had more internal objectives and for example, increasing their employees' social media skills. So they actually combined the social selling and employee advocacy to social media training. So then when the employees were more aware of the benefits for themselves for being more active on social media, then through that they achieved better results with social selling and employee advocacy as well. And at the end of the day, EY again is a big company, so they could increase their employees' knowledge across their service lines as well. So kind of like help in the internal communication. And again, as you mentioned, they're a professional services company, so they have a lot of good quality, valuable content and case studies and studies and white papers that they can publish and that are interesting to their network. So they could tell right away from the figures that they got a better, it outperformed any paid advertising campaign that they've done before.
Wow, it's a really good and really kind of simple example that start with the training, provide the client or the employees the tools and some kind of self confidence to use them and it helps.
Yep.
This was one campaign, but let's say what should an organization do? Let's say that now people listening to us say that, wow, it seems like a great idea. How to build it kind of in a more constant way? It's not only just one campaign. It should be kind of a more continuous development on employee advocacy. What else could a company or organization do?
Yeah. So it all starts with kind of having engaged employees. So sometimes you're in a good situation that you know that your employees are already very engaged with the brand and with the company and thus are more willing to participate and jump in on employee advocacy without receiving so much training or information about it. But I think the key is in any case kind of good internal communications even before the launch. So kind of just explaining to the employees what's in it for them for participating, so that they know to expect an invitation potentially from a software, and they know kind of like why should they be interested in it, what's in it for them. And then, like you mentioned, continuity is a key word. So not just having a big communication about the launch and then forgetting about it, but actually having fresh, good quality content for the employees all the time. So there's going to be valleys and there's going to be peaks in the activity. But usually if you have regular good content appearing on the platform, then the employees stay engaged.
Employees should expect receiving an invitation from a program. Mm. What does it mean? Does it mean that LinkedIn or Twitter is sending me an invitation or something else?
Yeah. Thanks for the additional question and the clarification. So this is in case you're interested in using a software for employee advocacy. In that case, usually how it works is that you get an invitation from the company or from the program leader, however you want to go about it, to actually join the program and then connect those social media accounts that you want to. And then you can use those social media accounts for logging into the platform to see the content and to also share content to those platforms. So that's what I meant with the invitation.
So it's not just only following what do the employees share in social media, but you can do it in a bit more systematic way.
Yeah, exactly. So more systematic, more structured, and kind of like be able to also measure. And it goes for both the individual employees. They get more information out of their own performance. So, for example, normally if you just share to Facebook, you see when people actually like the article or comment on it or share it forward. But if you're using an employee advocacy software, you actually see when people just click it. So even if you might not receive a lot of like likes or comments to the content, you might get a lot of clicks. So people actually access it and read it, and it is interesting to them, even if they don't then comment on it in the masses.
Okay, and that's why you can really measure the cost on click.
Yeah, and that's from the individual's perspective. So something new for the individual employee as well. But then from the company's perspective, you can then also measure the kind of like clicks and the amount of engagements or reactions to that content. See what sort of communication works the best in your particular case, your industry, and for your employees. And I think one of my favorite aspects about having a software is actually learning from your employees. So and increasing the transparency. So you might have an idea in your head what sort of communication and what sort of content is interesting to your audience. But then when you start seeing what sort of content the employees share and what gets the most engagements in their networks, you might be able to actually improve and change the way you communicate as a company as well.
If you talk about, in general, about user-generated content, so can we now talk also about employee-generated content?
Yes, definitely. So a big part of employee advocacy is also sourcing content from the employees. So if they keep their own blog, for example, they can suggest that to the platform to be shared by everybody. So that's definitely an important way to also learn from the employees and have them involved in finding good quality content. And I think the key here is also to have content outside of your organization. So it doesn't have to be produced by the employee or the company. It could be an external article about the industry or the company, or just something interesting, a trend going on, and that can be shared as well. So it definitely shouldn't be only about the company or the employees. So it could be about the industry in general as well.
Absolutely. What are the key success factors to build kind of a good and really working and kind of the program that brings you results in employee advocacy?
Yeah, so I already mentioned kind of the internal communication. That's important. But also something that you definitely want to have is somebody who has ownership of the program, so kind of like a program manager who has management support also for the initiative. So someone that's just looking over kind of like that everything is going well. Then something else I already mentioned about the kind of content. So the content, again, is key here. So it should be valuable for the individual employees, their networks, and the company as well. Then something that you might want to consider is the different ways of also recognizing the participants. So if you're using, again, a software, it could be gamified. So you can have, for example, points for activity and for good results. And then you can decide if you want to recognize those people internally, or it could be even the kind of like CEO or somebody from the management team going to Twitter and thanking an employee for being active, or kind of like just highlighting the good things and the good results that have been achieved. So it's entirely up to the company to be and use their imagination and creativity in figuring out the kind of different ways to recognize their employees. And then obviously it's important to also measure and adjust. So we talked a little bit about the different ways of measuring the results, but then also adjusting the program accordingly. So I think there's a couple of key success factors or building blocks for a successful employee advocacy program.
What the main challenges are?
It is helping the employees understand, so it doesn't kind of like catch them by surprise. So there's the internal communication again. So why is the company doing it, and what's kind of in it for the employees? Because if the employees don't understand the benefits of social selling or the use of professional social media and improving their own personal brand, they might not even have a look at the platform, or they might not be active. So that's definitely a key kind of like obstacle to overcome. So just explaining it to the employees what it is. So sometimes it could be, again, about the content. So helping the client actually understand what sort of content works, so that they could already have a lot of good content, but they are just not sure what works for employee advocacy or what works for social selling. So just helping them understand what sort of content works, whether it's about the company or marketing, or if it's more about HR or employer branding related. And then also helping them with kind of like the different ways of recognizing and the best practices that other companies are using, and also kind of like to help them understand what sort of results they should be expecting and what should they be measuring, what are the KPIs, so those sort of things.
Usually, looking at your experience, whose project is the employee advocacy? Is it the HR department or is it marketing department?
Yeah, great question. So usually it's the marketing department or the communications department, purely because they know about the kind of external marketing, external communications, and they also might have an idea how much money they are spending, for example, in online advertising or their digital marketing. So they can kind of like compare the costs and the results as well. But we've also some of our most successful cases have gone through actually their HR or employer branding department as well. So again, it touches a lot of different departments and stakeholders. So sometimes it's a group effort. Sometimes we go through one single department. So there's multiple different ways of being successful.
Usually the challenge I see here in Estonian market is that the HR department doesn't feel very, very confident about anything that is about content marketing or probably they are more confident about employee advocacy, but not about the communication part. Yeah. Is this the same in general, or is it just the different here in Estonia? And are there any suggestions you would have to them?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say we've had any kind of like problems with the confidence or the communication of the HR team. I think in that instance, it's important to have other stakeholders and other departments involved from the get-go. So it's not that we are talking to only the HR department and then it's up to entirely the HR department to kind of internally sell the idea or promote the idea. So in that case, have the, for example, somebody from marketing or somebody from the social media team or somebody from the communications actually involved in the discussions right away. So it's going to be a group effort then to take it forward in the organization, and also kind of like having somebody from high enough in the organization. So instead of going from grassroots up, to actually have a more of a top-down approach. So when you have the management team's approval, then it doesn't matter if it's the HR or if it's the marketing or another department, then things kind of move forward more easily.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a bit about the costs of running an employee advocacy program or a campaign? Mm. Let's say if it's for the first time in a company, maybe they have about, 100 employees. Mm. How should they plan it? How should they budget it? And when should they expect the results?
Yeah. So obviously about the costs, if you're using a platform, then the platforms usually charge per user per month. So it's kind of like a seat-based cost in that sense. But then in addition to kind of like the license or the seats, you can think about the kind of like time that some of the program managers or the actual administrators then have to or use to bringing fresh content and just making sure that everything is going well. So it's not like if you decide to use a software or a platform, you can just leave it be and it'll take care of its own. So some time from the actual people that are running it. And then if you want to have some sort of like rewards or recognition, then planning a budget for those. But that's also, you can kind of do it through trial and error. So see what sort of rewards are the most engaging for your employees and in the first place, if you even want to have them. So there's not a whole lot of cost to start with, especially if you're thinking about 100 person organization. It's pretty straightforward.
How quickly could they expect the results? If you start planning today,
yeah.
Is it, 2, 3, 4 months? Is it a year, some years?
Yeah, I think the best part about employee advocacy is that you can see results right away. So you can start getting the analytics and the statistics and the data right away. So the first day you start, you see, okay, this many people shared, we received this many clicks in these platforms, and then you can compare the what the cost would be for those clicks if you were buying online advertising. So you can see your estimated earned media value from day one. And also the most important thing to measure is kind of the conversions from your website. So if you're directing traffic to your website, you can actually see that, okay, this traffic is from our employee advocacy program and this person bought this item from our website because of that. So you can clearly see right away what was the monetary value of that conversion or even if it's application to a job. Some companies have calculated actually the what is the value of a single application and what is the cost of kind of like hiring for a certain position, so that can help them arrive at a monetary value as well. So those are important things to measure as well, and you can see them from day one.
In general, from day one, how long is the learning curve? When, let's say that I had the 100 persons, maybe they at the day one have just Facebook account, they are not in Twitter, they are not in LinkedIn, but I'm probably somewhere in the area where I really would love to use these channels as well. How long would it take for me to get the employees so acquainted with the channels that they really freely post everything they find relevant?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. And obviously, it depends on what is the kind of maturity level of the employees or the users from the get-go. If you're already familiar with all of those channels, then kind of there is no learning curve. But actually, something that we've found out with some of our clients is that they haven't gone to Twitter, for example, because they didn't have content. They didn't have time to kind of like learn how to do it and what should they be sharing there. But now when they see that the employer, the company has actually encouraged them to participate, then they create an account and they have content right away to share there. So it kind of like shortens the learning curve for the employees immensely, so they actually create new and enter new networks that they weren't part of before.
Very good. If we look now at the kind of the total, what does the employee advocacy programs in social selling means? Now, coming to the traditional marketing tools, are there any tools that you can say that, okay, employee advocacy programs can replace the traditional parts of advertising, communication, sales, or anything?
You can definitely compare, not sure if you can entirely replace anything, but just, for example, looking at the cost per click again of online advertising. So if you're getting a lower cost per click through employee advocacy, then you might want to invest more in that and invest a little bit less in paid online advertising, for example. And also, kind of like a big topic nowadays is ad blocking on social media and the kind of pay to play and the plummeting organic reach. So for example, at least a while ago on LinkedIn, if you were using an ad blocker, then you wouldn't see any promoted content on LinkedIn. So if a company actually purchased a promoted post, then you wouldn't even see it in your newsfeed. So kind of like getting around the ad blockers and also getting around paying for organic reach. So let's say your company, small company, has, let's say, 1,000 Facebook followers. Then if you share a post on Facebook, the 1,000 people are not going to see it automatically. You need to pay. Even though you've gained those 1,000 followers, they won't see it unless you pay more. But the social media networks will never limit the visibility of content that individuals, the employees, share, because it's up to them, and it wouldn't make any sense to kind of limit the visibility of those posts. So in that sense, it kind of like can help replace some of the more traditional methods of online marketing.
But there is no chance that it is going to replace at least something from my TV costs or from my radio advertising costs or from the print media costs that I maybe have kind of huge budget for today.
Yeah, definitely against that. So again, it's a lot harder to measure the effect of, for example, print. When you see that you're getting great results through this or some other form of kind of online visibility and advertising, then you might want to reconsider where you're putting your money into. But it all comes down to being able to measure and having the right mix for your company. So I'm not saying stop advertising on print or anything like that, but as long as you're measuring it and making the right decision for your own industry based on kind of like data and statistics, then you're on the right path.
Thank you a lot, Mikael. It was very interesting. And dear listeners, Mikael is going to be here in Tallinn next week during Tallinn Marketing Week. You are welcome to join the social selling session and also a dinner with him to discuss more.
Turundusuudised
is today about paternity leave. I hope I pronounce it right.
Yeah, and, it's a new term for me as well.
Yeah.
So.
And the background is that it's news that comes from Intel, and it's about a pet insurer called Petplan that has revealed that approximately 5% of new UK pet owners have been offered the opportunity by the employer to take off a work to care for the pets. Businesses in UK are also following the suit. According to Mintel's report about Britain's Pet Owners UK 2015, nearly one in five pet owners have stayed at home with a sick pet or have missed work to take care of a pet. One company with a paternity policy is BitSalt Solution, that is a tech support business based in Manchester. The owner states that the staff with the new pet are able to take up to 1 week of paid leave. On the other side, Shoppers Drug Mart is a Canadian company offering time off to employees suffering from the loss of a pet. So how would you comment this trend?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic and a new term for me as well. But the way I look at it is kind of like from a startup's perspective or a smaller company's perspective. So kind of like sometimes it's hard to compete on salaries against a bigger employer. So in that case, kind of like having perks and having these different things and standing out through having policies like that might help you attract better talent to your company. So kind of like from that perspective, it could be an interesting perk to offer if you know that somebody that you're interviewing is a pet owner or fond of pets or animals. Kind of like I'm thinking it from that perspective. Interesting trend for sure.
Is there anything that could be connected also to the employee advocacy?
I'm trying to think. Definitely, I'm thinking that if a company would have this, then it would be kind of like something new and fun for the employees to also share, and you would get kind of like for a small company again, you could get some visibility through this because it, again, it's kind of like a fun way, something different to stand out. So yeah, why not have a connection to employee advocacy as well?
Yeah, but probably this is not an only thing, or this is not the only thing a company should share about the company. There should be much more also, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But this could be a part of the mix. Again, kind of like talking about employee advocacy, you don't want all of the content to be about the company or something serious. So you want to have some fun things mixed in there as well. And also you want to think about what sort of things do the employees want to share, and especially if the company or the industry has something to do with pets or animals in a larger sense, then kind of like this would be also relevant content, so not just something fun to share.
Absolutely, and really considering the Facebook trends, that also always the pet pictures get good clicks, so it yep. might be sometimes wise to really balance it with kind of with the emotional part.
Yeah.
Not also, not only about the company.
Definitely.
Yeah, I was thinking also that is it something that we see here in Estonia, and really I haven't heard a company with a paternity leave policy. We are discussing here currently about should the fathers stay at home with kids, so we are not considering pets as a very kind of significant family members yet. So probably it takes time until the trend reaches Estonia. We hope to see it here also, but often it takes much more time than usually when we see something happening.
Turunduse täht.
And now we move on to our weekly marketing award. You told that you have a very interesting candidate for this week. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and if it can be a company. So around a week ago, I learned of this kind of interesting, cool Finnish startup called Integrify, and what they're doing is they're integrating the refugees to the country by teaching them coding skills and helping them get a job in a startup. So kind of like they're trying to solve the the kind of problem with integration to the society and immigration by actually teaching refugees coding skills and then helping them get a job right away and getting integrated to the society and the startup ecosystem right away. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea, and I know the founder Daniel, so hats off to Daniel and the rest of the founders for a cool idea.
Very good. It's an excellent idea. I had my candidate also from outside Estonia, and what really made me smile, and I was a bit jealous, was a campaign from Switzerland. Maybe you have seen it, about how Switzerland promotes the country before tourism season.
Yep.
And they have made a wonderful video about how they are getting ready for welcoming tourists. Mm-hmm. And when looking at the video, it's really from kind a bit like a humorous, really showing that how do they polish the boats to be ready for the tourists, how do they clean the grass to be ready and everything. So the very, very small details about the preparation. And the video really made me think that I would have loved to have this type of video about Estonia.
Yeah, and I think country branding is a big trend nowadays. And something that I've noticed now in the UK is obviously there's a lot more people and a lot of kind of like people or tourists in London and people going to holidays from London. So there's a lot of kind of like country-based advertising and branding in magazines and on television about like potential vacation spots. And Switzerland has been active in that front as well. So definitely something that I've noticed as well recently.
But on the other side, the company provided the Integrify. This is also about a good nation or country branding, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting content, and I shared it right away on Facebook when I learned about it. I thought it was a cool idea. So that's definitely a positive thing that we can also share externally. Okay. So yeah, definitely.
So it can be really done from very different angles because everything influences really the country. But now our next challenge is that we need to choose between those two.
Yeah.
What will get or who will get the weekly marketing award? And I'm happy to tell you that the guests usually start.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't see the campaign for Switzerland, so would be easier to kind of like make a decision based on that. But I think they're both good ideas, and I'm fine with either one going forward. But having not seen the campaign for Switzerland, I don't know if I have to choose. I'll choose Integrify.
Very good. I'll share the link with you about the campaign of Switzerland. You can compare and then understand what decision did you make. But I will support you. So my vote also goes to Integrify.
Turundus doktor aitab.
Case study sounds like that. Hi, I'm working as a marketing specialist in a culture and language research institute where one of our tasks is to promote an old language. Mostly elderly people speak the language, but for us it's important that young people start to speak the language with the parents and the grandparents. For several years we have had 1 week when we promote the language widely in Estonia. We have language competitions, use it in TV and radio programs. We promote the books in our language, speak it at schools in the kind of area of the where the old language used to be spoken. This year, we want to focus more on the diaspora living outside Estonia. How to influence the parents to teach the kids an odd language? Let's say if the parents live in Italy or UK or France, where they probably at home don't even speak Estonian, but any other language.
Yeah. So I read the case study, and the first thing that came to my mind, the question is kind of like how to influence the parents to teach the kids. So what I would do is kind of like turn it a little bit upside down. So think about how to make it fun for the kids. And then through that kind of like create some pull so that if the kids are interested in doing that, then the parents will probably jump on board as well. And I was thinking about ways how to make kind of like learning fun for the kids. So the first thing that came to my mind is some sort of gamification, and something that we use with employee advocacy and that works with social selling as well. So kind of like, how can you create a system that would kind of like give points for learning specific things? Maybe if you could include a leaderboard of some sort. If you can have an app, a lot of the learning nowadays is done on iPad, and it's not just at school, so it's kind of like on the go as well. And even better if you can create a kind of like a countrywide competition, for example. So if it's a school or if it's just individual families or kids or whatever, to kind of like have a competition, and that would also encourage social sharing. So that's kind of like the second point. So how to make it viral, how to make it people notice is kind of like when you reach new levels or when you get more points, then to be able to share that to social media. And again, it goes kind of like hand in hand with social selling and employee advocacy as well. And then the last thing that came to my mind is try to think about how to utilize ways of storytelling. So if you want to teach a language, then it's probably more interesting to learn it through kind of like stories and storytelling, whether it's a book or a film or some kind of like national story or anything. So those were the kind of like things that came to my mind at first.
Very good. I was thinking also about what are the possible solutions. And one of the things that came to my mind was that it's sometimes difficult to ask people to tell, let's say for them it's partly a foreign language, let's say. So there should be probably be some reason. Maybe it's they should find a reason, like let's talk about the food, what they have, what they used to prepare, how did they used to prepare, how do they call the different things. So it's more about the kind of everyday things, what you usually do anyway, or about the common habits what we had, or common traditions, and where did they come from, and why they are important, or Estonians usually are kind of fond of having the traditions and the traditional beliefs and all these kind of things that probably could be kind of triggers to generate interest from the kids as well. And maybe also that, of course, it's not the big language of the world, but it might be like a secret language also that no one will understand.
That is a very good point. So kind of like something special, something secret that not everybody can say.
Yeah, let's look at the movies. It's people learning different languages because it's so secret, it's so fun, it's so different. So it might be, and of course I understand that they try to really focus on the people with roots from the region. I don't know. Maybe if you find someone making a good movie, let's say, about the region or the history, about the language and the people, maybe there will be even a wider interest towards the language or towards the culture because it is so special.
Yep.
So just maybe thinking wider and trying to understand that it's not about language only, it's part of the culture, maybe would help them. And maybe it's also wise to think about different vocabularies, so that you have the translations to English or to German or to Spanish. Now they have only translation, I think, to Estonian. and and especially thinking about the kids who have moved outside Estonia, they probably don't know Estonian well enough to have it as kind of the middle language between their language and the new one.
Yeah.
But thank you a lot, Mikael. It was very interesting to talk to you. And dear listeners, please listen us again in a week's time. And meanwhile, please send us interesting case studies, because you know that we really love to solve them.
And then thanks for having me. Really enjoyed the chat and really looking forward to next week's event.
Sulle meeldis Turundusraadio. Teili endale meeldetuletus järgmiste saadete kohta Marketingi Instituudi kodulehelt.